Welcome to the Big Success Podcast, cutting-edge conversations on business and personal success, as well as how to level up. Here's your host, number one business coach in the world, Brad Sugars.
More than 20 years I've been studying Alan Pease. This is one of his first books I ever got, Right Language, him and Paul Dunn. I got to tell you, the way he explains how success happens and the way he talks about goals and achieving goals and the blockages to your goals today, it's going to blow your mind. Alan was Mr. Body Language. The guy sold more than 33 million copies of his books around the world, from the biggest training company in Russia. He was an Australian, massive in sales, communication, all of that stuff. When you think back to, this is a guy that is about to have his 72nd birthday, and you go back to when he was 21 winning national sales awards, this is someone who's been doing it for 50 years. Study Alan. Dive right in. I know in the second section, my first question to him there will blow your mind. Dive right in. Enjoy Alan Pease. Enjoy the Big Success Podcast. Let's go.
The Mr. Alan Pease. G'day, mate. How are you doing? Thanks for joining us from the beautiful Sunshine Coast in Australia.
Yeah, we miss you down here, Brad. The sun's shining and the ocean is beautiful and the sand's golden.
And everyone's having fun all the time. So that brings me to the point of question number one. How do you define success, Alan? What's your definition of it?
Well, yeah, that's the old saying about success is not an objective, it's a journey. And that's where a lot of people miss the idea. They set a goal, they set a target, and they say, well, when I get to that end, I'll be happy when I become a multimillionaire or run my own business or become a Buddhist monk or whatever their goal is. Mm. But they can be unhappy and miserable on the journey, whereas the journey is really the success. Getting to the end, usually with most goals, and most people who set a goal and get to the end, fine. It's kind of like a bit of an anti-climax because it's taken them as long as it was to get there, and they didn't enjoy the journey. So the key to success for me is to enjoy the journey. That is every day to enjoy what it is you're doing. And the goal is not that important when you actually get there. And you would have experienced this. It's like an anti-climax in some ways.
So has your definition of success changed or evolved over the years?
Well, look, it probably has because, I mean, I started setting goals back in the 1950s with my father. He was a life insurance salesman in southwestern Victoria. He was a country agent. And he used to bring home a HMV record player with these big 78 records that we'd play of people like Earl Nightingale and Dale Carnegie. And they talked about, you know, Dale Carnegie especially is the original guy who talked about setting goals and people to like you. So that's where it started for me, you know, right back in those days. But he talked about the goal being the objective. But since then, I've learned from experience of being an expert goal setter my whole life. I'm 72 this week, a matter of fact. And I've learned that the journey is the best part of it. So if you focus on the journey, there's every day, every hour, what enjoyment can I get out of moving towards the goal now as opposed to actually achieving the goal? Doesn't mean you let the goal get out of sight. So it's changed from the standpoint, I guess, that I love the journey. I'm having more fun on the journey. Whereas in the past, when I was a younger fella, I was hell-bent on achieving the goal. And it doesn't make you happy on the journey if you're focused purely on the goal.
So do you think those records was when you chose success, or where did you choose success in your life?
Well, I grew up with it because my father being a life insurance agent, now those guys were the cutting-edge motivational speakers of the 50s. They were the guys doing what we do now. And they talked about setting goals and having time plans and having deadlines. And so I learned that stuff as a kid around about the ages of 8, 9, and 10. So I grew up thinking that was normal. I thought everybody knew about this stuff. And so I started knocking on doors, selling pots and pans and selling all sorts of things as a 10 and 11 year old. And I was great at that. So I went into major selling as a teenager, knocking on doors, selling again pots. I was the king of pots and pans in Australia back in the 60s. And that was terrific. I loved every minute of it. But the whole thing about that was it's a process. You have a goal and you work out your objective. You break it down into the smallest possible parts, working out what you have to do next as part of that, and then decide to enjoy the journey. So, you know, look, I've been doing this forever.
So then what is the Alan Pease formula for success? Like, how does success happen? What have you created, or how have you created it?
Well, look, the hardest thing for any person, and trying to answer that question, and for all of us, I guess, is deciding what it is you really want to have, be, or become. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't do that. They start with that, well, how would I have a business? How would I create my own life? How could I become a wealthy? How could I become whatever you want to become? They start with the how. And what we know is if you start with the how, it's not going to work because you don't know how. If you start with the what I will have, what I will do, what I'll become. Now, remember, when you start with the what, you don't know how, and that's part of the excitement and part of the terror too. If goals don't scare you, they're not big enough. It's that simple. So they're going to be right out of reach, but you're not out of sight, so you can't see them. So you
hang on, say that again, because that's really important. Out of reach thing?
Yeah, well, first, goals, they have to make you nervous. They have to scare you. If they don't scare you, it's just a cruise. It's not worth it. So they've got to be big enough. You go, oh, holy hell, how am I going to do this? And they've got to be big enough to frighten you. They've got to be out of reach, but not out of sight. If they're over the horizon, well, you lose motivation because people are motivated by the idea of the end goal. So when you set a clear goal somewhere on the horizon, that's what motivates you to overcome obstacles as you go along, because there are obstacles. People think that you might hit a few bumps as you go along, but there are a hell of a pits and there are highs and there are lows, and you get bashed around and competitors come after you. That's a normal part of it. And if you've got a clear decision about what your goal is and what you're going to do, once you come across those obstacles, you learn how to jump over them, jump around and kick them out of the way. They don't bother you. But if you don't have a clear goal, you'll be motivated by what happens next. And most of what happens next in any goal planning, goal chasing is not going to be positive. It's going to be more negative than positive.
Dang. So you mentioned three things there. Decide what I want to have, be, or become. Explain that to me.
Well, it's what I call the what. Decide what you're going to do. So, for example, I'll give an example of the what. My life's been full of these whats. I decided back in the 70s that I would go to the Soviet Union and set up a training business there and become a famous celebrity, go on TV, write books, the whole bit. And I can remember people saying, well, how are you going to do that? So I don't know. And this is the point. Once you decide your what, when people say to you and the skeptics say, but how will you do that? I don't know, but that's what I'm going to do. Yeah, but how are you doing it? I don't know. And if they keep asking you, don't tell them anymore. And the worst offenders of doing this, as we all know, are relatives, family members. Because they're scared you might go ass up or something. You might fall over, hurt yourself in doing all this, or you lose your money, you'll get depressed. So they say, oh, you want to do what, Brad? You want to live in Las Vegas and do what? You could have stayed here in Australia. You could have been foreman of the local bank. you decide the what without knowing, and that is the scariest part of this. Don't think about the how, because the minute you think about the how appears. Like if you buy whatever car you drive, whoever's listening or watching this program, whatever car you drive, the moment you decide to get that car, you saw it everywhere. Everybody's driving that car. You see it at Avis Rent-A-Car at the airport. You see it in movies. You know, the bad guys that get in getaway cars, it's your car. Yet prior to deciding to get that car, you probably never saw that car before. And that's what happens. The part of the brain that searches for the how. You only have to decide the what I will have, do, and become. And it's that simple. It's not easy, but it's that simple. And then the how will appear.
So let's flip that over then. How do we learn success from failure?
Well, around 90% of most goals that you set, most significant big goals in life, will amount to 90% of the steps you take will amount to nothing. There'll be dead ends. There'll be black ends. Maybe 10% can be contributing or heading towards the goal. But if you start off understanding that most of what's going to happen in goal setting will not yield a result, then that doesn't bother you. So if you've gone through the first six things and they didn't work out, well, you've only got three more to go until you get the one you want. So because it's like selling, it's the law of averages. But most people are motivated by what happens next. And most of what happens next is not positive. So they get depressed, they get despondent, and they go back to doing what they normally do, back into their comfort zone again. So expecting negatives and knowing they're going to come and getting excited about that, the more negative, it's like selling, the more people who say, no, you can't have an appointment, the closer you are to the one that's going to say yes. And if you operate your whole business life on that basis, you won't have the highs and lows that we tend to get in business and in personal life and setting goals.
How long do you reckon it took for you to realize that, though, Alan? Like, I know as a young man, I was so impatient about this stuff. I wanted it immediately type thing. Did you have to learn it, or what was your thing?
I remember that guy. Yeah.
Well, when you think back to it, that you know, I still have one of these. This isn't the original. This is the hardback of the Alan Pease Paul Dunn book. I mean, geez, you looked about as young on this book as I did 10 years ago. So there you go, mate. That's how long we've known each other. But I mean, how did you learn that process, or how did you learn to become okay with that? Was it just from being in sales, or?
Well, initially, going back again to my father on the records he used to play at night after school for me on Dale Carnegie and all these guys who were master salespeople back in the 50s and the 40s. The first thing is that I understood was when you set a goal and you decide that's what it is, you'll be motivated to overcome any obstacles that get in your way, because obstacles will get in your way. That's the first thing that I think it was important. What was the question again?
It's like that. How did you learn to become okay with the nine things that go wrong to find the one that goes right type thing?
Well, it was through repetition and learning. And this is what it is in training, as you and I both know, that repetition over and over and learning the same thing until it becomes good, because you've got to hear the same piece of training six times over before your brain will accept the first time. It probably conflicts with a lot of your preconceived ideas. So your brain doesn't take it in, you reject it, even though you think it's a good idea. And then second time you hear it, you say, well, you know, I understand what you're getting at, Brad, but you know, I don't know whether it'll apply to me. Third time you say, this is a good idea, but it's still not working. By the time you get to the sixth time, you own it. Now you're teaching it to other people. So when I started, I can remember back as a kid, I come from a small country town, southwestern Victoria, a logging town in Lawn. 800 people lived in that town. And your objective as a young fella was to be the foreman of the mill. You know, if you were the foreman of the mill, you were the man back in those days. And I decided at 19 years of age, because I lived in what was called housing commission, which is state housing. You know, the government owned the house, and you know, because I come from a pretty poor background, which in many ways was a good start. I decided that by the time I got to 30 years of age, I was going to be a millionaire. Now, I didn't know what that even meant, because you know, I didn't know any millionaires in town. Might have been one or two, but they weren't visible. But I thought that's what I'm going to do. And the reason I wanted to do that, because I watched on TV all these shows called How to Marry a Millionaire and The Millionaire Man of My Life, and Bridget Bardot and all these beautiful women were chasing this guy because he was a millionaire. So I said, I'm going to be one of those. I had no idea what it meant. All I knew was that I'd have a crack at Bridget Bardot being interested in me. So I just decided by 30, I'm going to do that. Now, in housing commission, in state housing in a small country rural town, you can imagine if I told anybody, which I did.
Oh, yeah.
How the hell are you going to, like, get up with it living on the coast here? You know, if you knuckle down, you could be one of the second right-hand men at the mill. I said, no, I'm going to be a millionaire, because I saw on TV that's the way to go. So back in those days for me, it was a combination of determination. That's what I was going to do. How I was going to do it, I had no idea, but I knew that's what I'm going to do. And if people kept saying, but how, I'd stop telling them about it. And that's what you've got to do with friends and relatives who are the biggest offenders. They love you. It doesn't mean you don't love these people. You just don't tell them anymore. You only tell people who are likely to say, Brad, that's a great idea. I've got faith in you. You can do it. Only talk to people who'll support you. And so for me, it was determination and understanding from what I learned from the insurance records about you set goals, you have a plan, you break it back to the smallest possible thing, and then you do the next thing. And that's how it started. It was a combination. I've always been a fairly determined bloke, being like yourself, Brad. I've always decided what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do that. But the difference is I was going to do it without having any idea how, and this is applied to most things. When I went to Russia, I decided to go and set up this business in Russia. And people, how do you do that? It's the Iron Curtain. You know, they steal your kidneys. You wake up in an ice bath, blah, 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 which that could be true. But because I decided that's what I'm going to do, finally, when communism fell over in 1989, 1990, I was ready to go. I'd practiced it so much. And 6 weeks later, we arrived. And then I lived there 3 months of the year for over 30 years. It was our biggest business. It was a massive business. Yeah. And it all started just by deciding that's what I was going to do. If I had a thought about how, it never would have happened.
You're on the Big Success Podcast. I'm Brad Sugars. We're going to be back with Alan Pease. We're going to look at goal achievement and how the blocks and the things that get in the way of you achieving your goals.
Without the proper methodologies and strategies, building a wealthy life can be difficult. If you're struggling with building wealth yourself, this is the time to join Brad Sugars' 30X Wealth Program. The 30 videos in this program will help you learn how to make your money work for you rather than you working for it. Create the life of your dreams.
You're back here on the Big Success Podcast. I'm Brad Sugars. Today we are with Professor Alan Pease. Peasy, I've got to ask, goal achievement, because, you know, body language, you taught that for 100 years type thing, sales, the communication stuff. We'll touch on a little bit of that. But what you're teaching these days around goal achievement and how that happens, take me through that, because I think it's phenomenal to help people achieve what they want to achieve.
Well, where things have probably changed for me in that, and I wrote a book about this called The Answer, which was a big seller everywhere on how the biology works with this. Because now, today, we've got brain scans, and we've got fMRI, we've got things that look inside your body and find out what's going on, which we didn't have, say, before the 1990s. And what was found was that on the back of your brainstem, just behind the, you put your finger on here and move it to the back, you put your finger on those little parts about the size of a walnut. It's called the reticular activating system. It's just a little round bundle of nerve endings. And we've known about it for about 50 or 60 years. Most higher animals, like your dog and cat's got one as well. Uh-huh. And the thing about it, it's the distribution center for information to your brain. So whatever, everything that you see, hear, taste, feel, everything except smell goes into that reticular activating system. We call it the RAS for short, R-A-S. Goes into the RAS, and the RAS then distributes it to the brain based on the part of the brain that deals with it. Now, that's, as I said earlier, is one of the most exciting things, because the RAS has got two important things in it. It's got the Google search engine. Mm-hmm. That's how it works, at least. The Google search engine, meaning if you decide that you're going to drive to, like, it's funny, you know, talking about that. We have ultimate faith in our GPSs. We have ultimate faith that if we set the address to go to 22 Smith Street, South Nevada, we have 100% faith we're going to finish up at that address within meters. And that's exactly what the RAS in your brain does, that you put in there what is it you wanted, the what. You put the what in there. You don't have to think about the how, because you don't know how. If you knew how, you would have done it by now or be currently doing it. So you put into the RAS the what. And that's, if you decide the what is a four-door Mercedes-Benz coupe, the minute you decide that's the what, you'll start seeing these things appear everywhere, because the RAS searches the whole environment to try to find it, just like a computer. And it's got a Google search engine that does that as well. Now, we've known that it operates, this RAS operates your metabolism and other parts of your body function, but where it's been discovered recently is it also just links right into your goals. And that's why if you decide what you will have, do and become, and just think that and get images of it, pictures. That's why putting pictures on the wall works so well. The images on your computer of the what, whatever that is, your RAS will search the environment, and suddenly you'll start to see people and events and things related to that everywhere. If you start with the how, now your brain's searching your own database and you don't know how, because it's only little. But the minute you decide what it is you're going to do, have it become, put into your RAS, and away it goes. And that's the interesting thing about it, is that simple. Not necessarily easy, Brad, but it's that simple. And that's why deciding what is far more important than how. But most people, certainly in Western societies, we start with the how. How will we do this? If we don't know how, so we quit and go back to our normal, comfortable life.
So what happens then when I'm not achieving goals? I've sort of set the goal. I've done that. How does it get blocked?
Well, it gets blocked for a number of reasons. Many of the reasons are things and preconceived ideas from way back when we were a kid, that your parents or auntie May or somebody told you, look, Brad, look, you can't sing. You've got to stop singing in the shower. You're hopeless at doing that, which is what happened to me. I was told from a young kid, stop singing, you know, in the shower. And I love singing. But they said, no, stop. So I didn't sing until I got into my 60s. Because I believed in my brain that I couldn't sing. So I never said it as a goal, forgot all about it. And until I decided to, one of my goals was to join a rock and roll band as a lead guitar player by the time I got to 65. So at age 50, I started really getting into the guitar. And at 65, I joined the Coasters, which is a pretty heavy rock and roll band. And now I'm playing rock and roll as a 65-year-old. And the band said, listen, you've got to do some backup. We need the backup singing on this. We've only got one backup singer. And as soon as that happened, my my ancient training from Artie May took over. You can't sing, Alan. And every time I attempted to do it and I practiced at home, I just could not get the key. I couldn't understand it until one day I was on stage with some singers and they had this little blue box and they were singing through the blue box. And I said, well, how does that work? They said, well, it corrects your voice and puts it to the right note. And so when they're dancing, you know, you see all these singers dancing and singing. You cannot sing in tune and dance. It's not possible because you're going while you're dancing. But this little box takes all that out and corrects you to the right note. It's kind of a bit like cheating. So for $300, I said, I'm having one of those. And I bought one and I started singing through this voice corrector. Man, Brad, I was unbelievable. I'm doing Frankie Valli and I'm doing all the Beach Boys. And it's absolutely great. Now, here's the interesting lesson that came out of this. After about a year or so of doing this, I was starring with this backing sing, and I just turned my machine on, my safety blanket, and I wouldn't think about it again. We did a big concert one night, and we did a lot of Beach Boys and harmonies and other stuff, and I was great as usual. And when I was packing up the gear, I noticed that somebody kicked the cord out of the back of my voice corrector. It hadn't been on all night. In other words, my brain believed I could do this, and so I did it. So next time I tried it with the voice corrector off, guess what happened? The brain said, oh, well, you can't sing it. I'm out of tune again. So slowly I weaned myself off it. So now I will do backing without the voice corrector. But that, look, I'm 72 years old. I've had that you can't sing thing in my brain for a long time. So to answer your question, a lot of the things that stop us, the things that we were taught, most of them with good ideas, you know, they don't want you to look like an idiot singing in public. So they say, Brad, stop singing. Don't sing. And that's what happened to me, and that's what happens to most of us. And there are obstacles that come up, and we don't know why. Just for some reason, we get towards the goal and we start losing motivation. But many of them are intrinsic from the past. But if your goal is crystal clear about what you want and you decide, I'm going to have that, I'm going to have that goal, end of story, end of discussion, over and out. That's the way it's got to be. You've got to be that firm on it. And people who keep asking how, don't tell them anymore. Just decide that's what you're going to do and have faith that your Raz will find the hows. You'll start to see how.
Let's talk about influence, mate, because when we think about, you know, everything from body language to communication, leadership, getting people to move, what is the keys to succeeding at influencing others?
Well, influencing anybody the bottom line is to accept that you're a salesperson in the final analysis. If people buy you, that is, they feel comfortable with you, they feel that you're not threatening, that you like them, identify with them, they buy you, there's a good chance they'll buy whatever goes with you, which is where influence comes from. What goes with you is what you've got to say, what you've got to sell, or whatever goes with you. And all of us are trying to influence and persuade people to like us, to buy from us, to marry us, to hire us, to do all these things. And so if you get people to buy you, and that's the last part of what influence is, and where body language fits into it, because we know people form up to 90% of their impression about us in the first 4 minutes on a first meeting. So if you screw the first 4 minutes up, you're going to struggle to get that person to buy you. In fact, most of that happens in the first 10 seconds, and we spend 3 minutes 50 confirming what we think we saw and heard. And the great news about that, you can rehearse and practice the first 4 minutes of meeting someone in terms of your handshake. Certainly your dress, you can control that completely. How you behave, eliminating negative gestures and behaviors, saying positive things, all the things that you teach in the course. By saying positive things and getting people on site, they buy you, they'll look for reasons to say yes. And we also know that reverse is true. If somebody doesn't buy you, there's something about you that they just can't take to. They don't even know what it is. Can't articulate. There's something about that person. Oh, I don't know what it was. You know, I just didn't hit it off with them. They'll look for reasons to say no, even if it's a good idea. So that's why. Yes. That's why it's a good idea. They're still, because I can, maybe if I'm going to do this, Brad, I'll get it from somebody else who I like. And so selling yourself to somebody, that first critical 4 minutes is important, but you've got to continue it, which is why having great positive open body language and getting people to feel relaxed and comfortable and being able to read how you're going. Are they with me? Are they against me? Do they believe me? Are they holding back information? Having those sort of skills makes you become a charismatic type of person. And studies with charisma show that around 3% of people in the world appear to be born with the charismatic gene. It's not a gene, but it's called the charisma gene. Bill Clinton's like that. You know, he did a lot of shocking things, but everybody loves the guy. And they pay him $100,000 to talk about it at a luncheon function. I mean, You imagine George Bush getting paid to talk about what he did. He didn't have the charisma, and 97% of us don't. But the good news about this is you can learn by doing training, by doing courses, by reading books on self-development. You can learn to become charismatic, because if you're not charismatic now, it's only because you've picked up a whole series of non-charismatic behaviors your whole life. And once you've identified what they are, you can eliminate those and replace them with positive ones and become influential.
Yeah, it's interesting, Alan, because I remember as a young man when I first read How to Win Friends and Influence People. And it wasn't until later in life that I realized you can use that for a period of time, but eventually you have to actually be that person. You can't just practice the techniques. You've actually got to become the nice person sort of thing.
Well, on that subject, I get people occasionally who say to me, and you'd get this too, say, you mean I've got to fake it? Yes, yes. Fake it till I make. Yes. Fake it means you are practicing new behaviors that aren't in your normal repertoire. And like you get a bucket of water, you drop a stone into it, displaces some water, you drop another stone, displaces a bit more. So the water was the negative behaviors and the stone is the positive new thing you're going to add. Just keep putting it in till the bucket's now full of stones and not water. And that is who you become, because you are who you are because of all the training that you've had inadvertently in your whole life. But you can reverse it. That's the great thing about it. You can reverse it. You can decide which stones go in the bucket and put them in one by one until you become that person. So faking it till you make it is not insincere. It's like you're acting until you get it right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just practicing. Like someone says fake it till you make it. I said, you're not actually. You're just doing a practice run in front of someone and giving it a shot and seeing how the feedback is of that. Is that the person you want to become, not who you want to be?
I had someone the other day, but you love this. This guy was going for a big job interview and he's pretty nervous about it. And I was giving him a few tips of how to make an entrance so that you feel relaxed and other people feel accepting. And a couple of people said, nah, look, don't worry about that. Just be yourself. Now, just be yourself can be some of the worst advice you can give somebody when they're going face to face.
You're on the Big Success Podcast. I'm here with Alan Pease. We're going to be back in a moment. We're going to talk about scaling up and going for the massive goals, not just the normal size ones.
Alan Pease researches and studies the psychology of selling, relationships, and human communication. He teaches simple, field-tested skills and techniques that get results. His messages are delivered in a humorous way, which motivates people to want to use these ideas immediately. To learn more about Professor Alan Pease, please visit peaseinternational.com.
And you're back, Big Success Podcast. Alan, I want to talk about not good but great, not the goal of million but the goal of billion. You've taught it, you've done it, you've seen it around the world. What's the difference between someone who goes for a million and someone who goes for a billion, someone who goes for good and someone who goes for amazing? What's the difference?
Well, that's a really great question. And I wrote about this back in the early 80s in one of my books, that they did a first study of the differences between millionaires and billionaires in the early 80s, where those amounts of money were maybe 5 to 10 times the value of what they would be today. And they wanted to know what makes somebody a millionaire versus what makes somebody a billionaire when they've all got the same amount of time, the same 24 hours in the day, and maybe not dissimilar IQs as well. And the difference they found was that with billionaires, what they wanted to do, their goals were all committed to writing. And that was a really standout difference. The millionaires knew what they wanted to do and they were determined, and they in their mind, they knew where they're going to go and how they're going to have it. The billionaires had a written plan that they would read regularly. And that was the one standout feature between the two that really struck me. So that's when I started writing everything out in detail. Mm-hmm. And again, with big goals between a millionaire and a billionaire, if it doesn't frighten you, then it's not worth doing it. And that's one of the reasons you should scale up and think big, because it's just as easy to become a billionaire as it is become a million. In fact, becoming a millionaire is probably harder.
Yeah, it probably is in this day and age, although this day and age, all you got to do to become a millionaire is buy your own home, live in it for 20 years and pay it off. I mean, that's sort of millionaire, and millionaire's not even rich anymore. So it's kind of thing. So let's talk about then, Alan, I want your theory on this then. Someone sets a goal. How do we help them achieve that going for a billion goal? Like, how do you get someone that is like, oh, I can't write that down. I can only write down millionaire. Or I can only write down normal salary rather than making $1 million a year. How do you shift someone to actually going for that massive goal?
Well, that's pretty hard to do, Brad, because you know, Auntie May, when they were 10 years of age, were telling me they couldn't do it, and that tape's likely to be spinning. The first thing in achieving any goal for, at any level, at any site, is to decide that's what you will do. And this is what most people don't do. They don't decide that's what I'll do. They say, I'd like to do that, but how would I do it? Then they start wallowing around with the hows. When you wallow around with the hows, well, you get lost, and then you go back. After two or three days, you become despondent, and they go back to their normal life. And deciding the what, however big it might be, is, if it scares the hell out of you, well, then it's a good goal. If it's over the horizon and you can't see it, then they're not going to do it right now, because many billionaires, that certainly ones that I know, started as millionaires. They never saw themselves as billionaires until they became multimillionaires. Then they thought, hey, I can do this. So it's a matter of having smaller goals, becoming bigger goals. But then as you go on, goals will become bigger. So, for example, look, when I wrote Body Language, I wrote that in 1976. And I can remember saying to my wife, I said, you know, if we sold 10,000 copies of this, this would be absolutely unbelievable. We'd make $6 a copy. We'd make $60,000, which was a lot of money back in those days, particularly coming out of housing commission. And so far, we sold about 32 million or something to date. You lose count of these things. But if I had thought about 32 million then, I could not have possibly got my head around it. So having an intermediate goal of selling 10,000, when I got to 10,000, I was like, this is not so bad. We could sell 100,000. Then we could sell a million. So as you get to each level, that then widens your horizons to thinking about bigger things. But the important thing is to start with a goal in the direction of what you really want to do, have, and become. And decide the what, not the how. The how is, everybody gets bogged down on the how. Yeah, but how would I write a book? Okay. Well, decide. Yeah, but how? Look, I failed English at school in a small country town. I wrote some of the world's biggest selling books. I didn't think about how. I thought about how. Never would have decided what's going to happen, what I'll do, and then I figured it out.
Yeah, I know. If my English teacher knew I'd written 18 books, she would absolutely, I think, you know. But it's interesting because at Action Coach, whenever we meet a new client, we just tell them your first goal is to improve your revenues by 10%. That's your first goal with it. It should happen within 12 weeks. That's what we want to do. And so it's almost like, Alan, for some people, you know, you find your calling. Other people, you have to get given your calling. How did you get into teaching, and how did you decide to be one of the biggest teachers in the world?
It happened organically. When I was a kid at school, I was always a kid that would call out the smart comment, and I'd stand up and crack jokes, and the class would laugh their heads off, and I spent a lot of time in detention and with the dunce hat on in the corner, because you weren't supposed to do that. Now, every time the teacher would say something, I would come up with some smart alecky type line which would get me sent to the headmaster. I remember some of our science teacher was telling us about his life in Ballarat, small country town here in Australia. And he said, yes, he said, I can remember when I was a kid, my wife at the time was in charge of the mill, because the mill was a big deal. And I called out, I bet she gave everybody circular saws. And, of course, that's got me sent straight to the to the headmaster, because you weren't supposed to say that. So for me, I started off being what I would call a professional smartass. That's pretty much what I was. And I love standing up and being a professional smartass. And then I figured out in the late 60s, when I was training salespeople how to door knock and sell pots and pans and so on, I figured you can make a career out of this. And that's back in the days in the 60s, Brad, where there weren't really guys like you and me. There weren't people that ran training businesses or were professional speakers. Mm-hmm. And so I decided in the late 60s, I'm going to do this the rest of my life. This will be a career. And I can remember people saying, how? I don't know how, but yeah, this is what I'm going to do. And that's what happened. If I had started with the how, Brad, it never would have happened. I'd be working as a foreman at the mill.
I want to hit the quick fire round. Some quick questions, quick answers on how do you succeed at these things. First one, how do you succeed at relationships?
Well, first thing with relationships, and I've written some books on this, as you know, is you start by understanding with relationships. You're talking about opposite sex relationships?
You can let's do that one, yes.
Okay, yeah, well, that's a tricky one now, because you're supposed to go around pretending to everybody that men and women are the same, want the same things. if you've had any experience with it, you know that just doesn't work at all, is to understand that male and female brains, I'm talking here about 93% of the population, not the 7% that's going through transition from boys to gays and transsexuals. That's a different subject. But 93% of us, our brains are different. And that's what you want. I mean, you don't want to wake up next to you every day, Brad, and look at you, do you?
Thanks, mate. Thanks.
I don't want to wake up next to me. I want to wake up next to something that is challenging, that's interesting, and that I don't really have the skills and abilities that that person's got. And that's the thing that attracts us. But if you don't manage those differences, that's what's going to send you to the divorce court. Yeah. Because I can think of I've got six kids, and my eldest daughter saying when she was 19, "Oh, this guy's so cute, Dad. You know, he looks in the fridge, he can't see anything, and he can't find his shoes, and he's lost his keys. He's so cute." 6 months later, she's going to murder this guy because he can't. So with relationships, understanding that we are different, accepting we're different, and learning, and there's lots of books around, they're not only my books, but there's lots of all sorts of books on how to manage relationships. Yeah. I've been married to Barb now for 33 years, and every day, and this morning she said to me, it's her birthday today, should I wear these gold earrings or do you think we should wear the pearl earrings? Now, any man who's had experience knows this is a trap. You don't answer that question. And so I said, is this a real question, darling, or what's going? She said, yeah, I really want you to pick. And one of our daughters was there, and she said, come on, Dad, stop wasting time. We've got to go pick the earrings. I said, yeah, but if I pick the earrings, like if I pick diamonds, she would say, well, what, don't you like the pearls? So I said, all right, okay, look, based on the shoes and based on the dress you've got some sparkles, and based on your jewelry, I'd go the diamonds. And then she said, oh, look, you don't know what you're talking about. She took them both off and put on some rings. Now, if you don't understand that as a man, you are going to go round the bin. I understand it. It's a difference. And I love it. And I laugh about it. Whereas as a younger guy, it might have driven me to alcohol or something. Understanding that men and women are different is the first starting thing with relationships. And manage them according to, it's a bit like if your partner spoke French and you didn't, there's no point speaking English because they don't get it. You get a phrase book and you learn the basic phrases and start learning that language. And when you do that, people will accept you. So that's the key to relationship, understanding that we are different. We're not the same as many authorities try to claim. These authorities are confusing equality with difference. Equality means the same background, skills, education, ability. It doesn't matter what color, race, creed, where you're from, you've got the same opportunity. That's equality. Difference is a science question. If we look inside your head with scanners, which we do, do we process things the same way, have the same goals? The answer is no. And that's what we want. We don't want to wake up looking at us.
But all the things you've learned about the subject of success, what's the best advice you ever got, or the best quote even that you ever read on the subject of success?
Best one I ever read on it. I think it's one I wrote, actually. And that is, as I've been saying through this podcast, decide what, not how. Decide what you will have, do, and become. And once you decide that's what it is, the how appears. If people try to talk you out of it, try to talk you around it, and rallies are the worst offenders, and some of you don't love them, just don't tell them anymore. Only tell people that will support you. Decide the what, and the RAS will take over. And it'll search for the how, and you'll see how.
The Alan Pease, Professor Alan Pease. Make sure you read, watch, follow, learn, study everything from this man. Alan, thanks so much for your time on our podcast today. We'll be back on the Big Success Podcast next week with more on how you succeed. And that's the Big Success Podcast for today. Hopefully you took a lot of notes, and hopefully you learned a bunch, and hopefully you're going to take action on it and refer people. Remember, if you haven't subscribed, click that subscribe button now. Be with us every week on the Big Success Podcast. BS, Brad Sugar's Big Success. Take action. Check the show notes for all the links. I'll give you all the links for everything that your speaker had. Make sure you follow through and keep the learning going. Remember, you got to grow into your goals. I'll speak to you next time on the Big Success Podcast.
You've been listening to the Big Success Podcast with the number one business coach in the world, Brad Sugars. To learn more about how to achieve business and personal success, as well as how to level up or listen to past episodes, visit www.bradsugars.com.